Good evening, friends. Welcome to Steel Belt at Free Range Radio, your roots country place to be on a Thursday night. My name is Jeff. I'm here solo mode. Actually, I'm not here tonight. It's Carter's birthday. Happy birthday, Carter. So I can't be at the station when it's Carter's birthday. I gotta be hanging out. So can't be here tonight, but I got a great show for you. I gotta tell you about the shows coming up this weekend because I wouldn't want you to accidentally miss them. So this show today is pretty much dedicated to the stuff that's going on this weekend. Next couple of nights, you're going to park yourself down at the West End Cultural Center. And both nights, you're going to go down to the High and Lonesome Club after that. It's going to be awesome, I guarantee you. Tomorrow night, we got a great show at the West End Cultural Center, the double-barreled CD release party featuring Scott Nolan, Winnipeg's Own, and the amazing, legendary Gurf Morlex. That's going to be awesome. Then I believe they're going to head on down to the High and Lonesome Club after that. And darn it, so am I. Then on Saturday night, we're going to have our good friend Steve Forbert headlining his first Winnipeg show ever. The guy's been making records since 1978. Never headlined a show in Winnipeg as far as I know. So this is going to be a big deal. West End Cultural Center Saturday night. So we got a couple of special things coming up for you. First of all, we're going to have an interview I did with Steve Forbert. He played the Winnipeg Folk Festival in 2005. And I talked to him just before that. Then coming up after 7 o'clock, we'll have an interview I did with Scott Nolan way back in 2004. Hard to believe, but this was just before the release of No Bourbon and Bad Radio, his last record. And it's kind of interesting, actually. On that show, he did a couple of songs that appear on his new record, Receiver Reflector, which he's releasing tomorrow at the West End, including, stay tuned for this if you missed it, 3 years ago, or you've somehow forgotten 3 years ago, a cool version of one of my favorite songs of the year, Everything to Everybody, the original version. Check this out. Stay tuned after 7 o'clock for that. And come on down and see Scott Nolan tomorrow. Anyways, but first, here's a chat I did with Steve Forbert a few years ago. This guy's a great storyteller, an amazing performer, and he's got some great, great songs over the years. It's going to be great to see him back at the West End on Saturday night. So here's my chat with Steve Forbert from a few years ago. Welcome, Steve Forbert, to the show.
Hey, hello. How are you?
I don't mean to make you feel old or anything, but I've been listening to your music most of my life. I remember my parents had your records when I was just a little kid, and I think I've been listening to them ever since. So thank you for yesterday, anyway.
Well, I'm going to assume you're only 14.
That's absolutely true.
Okay.
And so for folks that sort of remember the records that you had back in the 70s and 80s, what have you been up to for so long?
Well, I've never stopped, really.
Yeah.
It's just about songs and traveling. It's, traveling and playing shows and occasionally making records, recording the songs.
Yeah. That seems to have been your focus over the past bunch of years, is the touring. You seem to tour quite a bit.
Well, yeah, I've been traveling to play music since I was 15. So, and if you really want to know the details and the releases and sort of a chronology of it, it's all on the website.
Yeah, do you tour sort of out of necessity? Is that how you get the word out these days, or is it because you still love doing it, or a bit of both, I guess?
Well, it's just a good thing I do love doing it because it's what I do for a living, really.
Obviously,
I don't sell enough records to just, own property in the Caribbean and relax.
That would be nice, though, wouldn't it?
I suppose it would, but I might miss this. I might still do it. I don't know, but for now, I like what I do, and so that helps a lot.
Well, I think it's great, though, because what you do live is, for me, has always been something a little bit special. It's a little bit different than what you hear on your studio records, and folks seem to really connect with your live shows. Are you trying to do something different with the live shows, or is that just...
Well, I think really... I don't make the records, I have to say, really just... I approach the shows to have fun a lot more than making records.
Yeah.
Making records, it seems to be inherently a more serious process.
Yeah.
And more detail-oriented. So when I finally get to where I need to be and it's time for the show to start, I try to have fun with it.
That's good. Well, and I think I can tell you from experience that the audience has fun along with you, so thank you for that.
Well, I hope that will be the case up there in 2 weeks, and thank you.
The records haven't come as frequently as they used to. Back in the early days, I guess you were pumping them out fairly quick. These days, they've come about 5 years in between. Is that sort of by design, or is that just the way it works out for you?
Let's see. They about Evergreen Boy was 2000. This one was 2004. I released a lot of things I wanted to get out that were archival, if you will, in between. But it takes a while. And that's okay. I would rather the songs be of the quality I'm happy with. Right. And make the record and have it stand up than just, you know, get on any kind of mad schedule.
Yeah. Do you write a lot of songs, Steve?
I don't write a lot of songs, but I work all the time at them.
Yeah.
I work at them and just kind of chip away at them. I get the ideas and can get them down pretty fast, but then they seem to take a lot of polishing, if you will.
Yeah.
A lot of just... And just making sure everything works. It's kind of, I don't know, songwriting is a challenge.
Does that come sort of by yourself, or do you work them out as you play them for an audience?
I play them for an audience when I think they're done.
Right.
Sometimes I'm wrong, sometimes they don't work, or sometimes I see things within them that don't work or that could be better.
Yeah.
So I'm looking for the response. I'm looking carefully, but that's usually not until I think it's done.
Yeah. It seems to me that, especially with a lot of the older material, you've changed a lot of it up. Are your songs always sort of changing, or is that just sort of a necessity so you don't get bored of them? Or?
Well, they lyrically stay pretty much the same.
Yeah.
And you know, they're going to change just with time a little bit. I don't do things as radically as say Bob Dylan does with his material.
Right.
But sometimes I make medleys out of them and things like that, or join them with songs that have moods that connect with an older song, so that I can in that way maybe sort of keep it a little fresh for myself.
Right. Have you noticed that the older songs seem to resonate with a lot of people? I mean, every time I see you, there seems to be somebody that's calling out for one of the old songs and really is dying to hear it. That must make you feel good as a songwriter to know that these songs are connecting with people 20 and almost 30 years later.
Well, of course it does, and that's part of the reward of the live shows. But I have to say, it's folk rock, you know.
Yeah.
And folk rock, unlike pop... just inherently is kind of an enduring kind of ongoing form that doesn't go through a lot of fads and changes.
Right.
It's of course pretty much akin to Americana and what they call AAA radio. You know, it's in that vein. But the Byrds and Bob Dylan started folk rock, and It's still alive and well today. Not, you know, in the headlines, but it hasn't changed a lot. It's a lot about the lyrics. Sometimes it's about storytelling, and it's as much about what or how you're saying what you're saying as just the groove or the music.
Mm-hmm. How has sort of your songwriting and your approach to the craft changed over the years? I would think that when you were younger, it was a lot different than it is now. You're obviously more confident and have your own sort of ways of going about things now.
The only change I know, other than just as you get older, you have different things on your mind and different themes, you know.
Right.
At 21, I couldn't have written a song called Responsibility, and certainly wouldn't have been musing about years gone by in a song like Oh Yesterday.
Yeah.
So those kind of, your outlook changes, and you... So you're writing about different things. But I think the basic thing I've always been interested in, country music, folk music, blues, and rock and roll. And it's still just kind of a mix of that I put together, listening to everybody from Buddy Holly to Brian Eno in Mississippi.
Yeah. It's always seemed to me that your songs convey a lot of emotion and a lot of feeling. Is that something sort of that you go for?
No, I think it would be weird to be thinking about it.
Yeah.
You'd probably end up overdoing it or forcing the issue. I've just been playing since I was 13 or 11 or 12, and then traveling to play music since I was 15. So that's, you know, I like it, and so I'm going to have a good time with it. And if it's emotional, that I've always, you know, I'm a Janis Joplin fan. I listen to Percy Sledge and Charlie Pride, and you know, that's what it is.
Yeah,
Billie Holiday. It's going to be emotional. I'm not trying to compare myself to those people, but that's just what I think music is.
Yeah,
it's an emotional experience, I think, isn't it?
Yeah, for sure. You certainly come from a musically rich part of America as well. Was music a lifelong thing for you, or did music come to you at one certain point in your life?
Well, I always just liked songs. Even when I was 4 and 5 and 6 and 7, I had a little record collection of 45s. I didn't, you know, at that age, of course, which I see in my own daughter, who's only 10 now, you don't have any prejudices about, I don't like that, or that doesn't rock enough, or that's square. You know, you just like something or you don't.
Yeah.
But then it all sort of solidified with me with the Byrds recording of Mr. Tambourine Man. I just felt like, there's something about this, and I've just got to find a way to get involved with it.
Yeah. I want to talk a bit about Jimmy Rogers. I know he was a huge influence on you.
Yeah, and he's a song guy, too.
Tell us a bit about why and what Jimmy meant to you.
Well, I wish we had a whole program for that, but he was from Meridian, Mississippi. It's my hometown as well.
Mm-hmm.
So I've heard of him all my life, but around the time I got tracing it all back when I was 17 and 18, you know, as far as recorded music, a lot of the roots of the music sort of went back and ended there with Jimmy Rogers.
Yeah.
The father of country music. And so I always told myself someday I have to do a proper tribute to him because he's so much a part of my roots, if you will.
Yeah.
And finally, I got with Gary Talon and some players that I knew would work well together, and we got in the studio and went through the process of learning a lot of his songs and seeing which ones clicked for us and our style.
Yeah.
It was fun, and it proved to be more challenging than I thought it was going to be. His style sounds real simple, but when you sit down and try to do it, it's deceptively simple.
It's got to be a bit intimidating as well, going in for somebody that was such an influence on you, and you had such, was one of your idols, I would imagine, to go in and think, like, how am I going to do this song that's paying tribute and not, you know, just sort of messing with Jimmy Rogers?
Well, you know, it wasn't a problem. I knew a lot of these songs, and I just had a certain, I don't know, I read the book on Jimmy Rogers, too, by Nolan Porterfield, and it all just kind of came together in my mind as the way I felt about the material, and I didn't have a problem interpreting it.
Yeah.
We didn't want to be exactly like the originals. We couldn't have. No one can yodel like him. How does a guy who's dying of tuberculosis be the best yodeler out there to this day, you know, in his style that he invented? It's unbeatable. So people may be laughing, but that's probably because they're not familiar with him. I mean, his yodel is very expressive, and it's not just some sort of you know, Bavarian thing.
Yeah,
it's a weird thing he invented, and there's a lot of speculation as to how and why he invented it. But see, like I'm saying, I could do a whole program about my appreciation of Jimmy Rogers. But the book was really is really a good thing to read, and I don't know, after kind of doing my homework, I just felt ready to do it, and then we had to get into the mechanics of it.
Well, I don't know if you've looked at the schedule for the Winnipeg Folk Fest, but you're actually doing a workshop with Ramblin' Jack Elliott, where he's paying tribute to Woody Guthrie, and you're paying tribute to Jimmy Rogers. So that should be a good workshop. You'll get to play some of those songs there.
Well, that should be really fun. I'd like to hear him play anytime, and just like everybody else, I like to hear him tell stories just as much.
Yeah.
I hope he'll do both.
Do you play a lot of festivals, Steve?
No, I don't play a lot of them. I don't play a lot of them. I seem to be asked to play the Canadian festivals more than the U.S. ones.
Really?
I don't know. They're called folk festivals.
Yeah.
And maybe some of the festivals think that because I had a brief splash with a hit record and sort of a more folk rock career in pop, I think they think maybe there are other people that fit in at the festivals more. So the Canadian festivals asked me up more.
Really?
Yeah, which is okay. Great. Glad to be there.
So are you trying to dispel that that image that was sort of created of you back in the late 70s and 80s and prove that you're still just a good old folk singer doing your thing?
Well, no, I'm not really trying to dispel anything because it's all the same to me.
Yeah.
I really never said, oh, well, this phase is over or my music is a lot different now or, God, I hate playing those old songs or, you know, that I just don't have those kind of, I just don't feel those kind of delineations through these three decades nearly.
Yeah.
In fact, we've nearly finished a DVD that puts together sort of a loose version of the whole saga, you know, the whole, I don't know, the whole years and years and years.
Yeah.
With clips and all, and it's okay with me. I enjoyed collecting these things and putting them together in order.
Is that sort of tough going through and sort of writing your own life story, though, for this DVD?
Well, it's not tough. I have an advantage because I get to pick the performances and all that. It's so, you know, I'm cheating a little. I'm giving you what I think has held up from what I can select from.
Right. But you've done some, like you said, some archival work. You put out Young Guitar Days and stuff like that. When you go back, like, how do you feel about the earlier stuff that you did? Do you see a real career trajectory for you, or like you say, is it just all part of, you know, what you do from time to time?
Well, it's all part of what I do all the time.
Yeah.
And if for like I said earlier, it's still about the songs. It's just about the songs. I just got a new record by some kids call themselves Black Mountain.
Oh yeah.
And I just got the Frank Sinatra, Sinatra and Strings, you know. But what I'm listening for is just songs.
And what to you is a good song though? Like, what are you looking for in a song? How do you connect with the song yourself?
Well, you know, that varies from individual. You know, there's many answers on that as you ask people.
Right.
Except for the people that just don't really feel much for songs.
Yeah.
Wouldn't even care to answer. But for me, I don't know. There's just something about it. I couldn't say I like Charlie. I like Charlie Pride because he's got a particular kind of humility in some of his best records. But then I like Iggy Pop because of his so audacious, you know.
Yeah, yeah.
So I couldn't say.
When you play the festivals, is that sort of your chance to get to know a lot of new music, sort of like us? I always kind of wonder, like when I go to the festival, I go and I get introduced to so much new stuff. Does that sort of work for performers as well?
Absolutely.
Yeah.
You know, if you see someone who's been playing music a long time professionally, if you see them in the hotel lobby and they're checking in or waiting for the elevator, don't think they're not listening to what's piping through, what's playing in the room through the speakers, even if it's Muzak, you know.
Yeah.
Believe me, they're listening. You get real good at it, too. You can do a couple of things and be listening to the music at the same time.
Yeah. Do you actually talk shop with other songwriters and talk about sort of how these things come together?
It depends on the individual.
Yeah.
You know.
For sure. You must get a chance to do a lot of different things in a workshop as well, though, and learn new things and try new things as you're playing along with other people.
Well, those things, to tell you the truth, are really not the most relaxed situations for me, and
really?
I think others would agree.
You're
kind of wondering, you know, you're wondering what to do next and wondering what on earth you're going to be following and will you fit, or do you have something to complement it, or, you know, and there you are, you're kind of waiting your turn, and you're kind of, you know, you're really winging it. I guess that's why they do them.
You're taking the magic out of this for me, Steve. I thought you were just hanging around and jamming, and now you're telling me it's work.
Well, I guess some of what I'm saying, yeah, about the workshops, yeah, they're not just chummy things. I mean, they're fun and they're chummy, but you're kind of on the spot too, aren't you?
Yeah, for sure, for sure.
It's all right.
We talked a bit about influences and friends earlier, and this sort of brings it together. It must have been about 5 years ago, at least. I was at the Edmonton Folk Festival, and you were there, and that was the first time I heard you do your tribute to Rick Danko.
Yeah.
Would you tell me a bit about that song and about knowing Rick?
Well, for one thing, it's all in the song.
Yeah.
There is a verse I left out about Rick outside of a club in Davis, California, that was told to me firsthand by the club owner.
Yeah.
About Rick standing there as the crowd was lined up changing clothes, standing
yeah.
by his rental car, putting on his quote-unquote stage clothes. It's like, wow.
Yeah.
Rick, you know, there is a dressing room back there, but okay. what a character. You know, the thing about Rick is just he was really oddly down to earth and just as wild as the wind.
Yeah.
Really nice to people, and when you'd see him again, he'd be the same way, and you'd say, wow, this guy's actually, you know, really this friendly.
Yeah.
And I just meet people all the time that were impressed by that.
Well, that's great. A lot of people react to that song differently, though. Do you find that as well? A lot of people think that it doesn't necessarily paint him in the nicest light, but I guess you're just telling it like it was in a lot of ways.
I think there are a few things that are rather frank, but I think
yeah.
the overall thing of it is certainly very, you might say sentimental.
Yeah.
And then I've gotten some people that think it's more of a song really that just kind of relates to sort of the end of an era to them. I never thought of it in a larger scale really than just a song sort of about I miss Rick Danko and there won't be another one like him.
Yeah. Do you find yourself, like, was writing this song sort of a way to deal with his death or his life? Did that sort of put it all together for you or close that chapter and make sense of everything for you? Is that what songs do?
Well, sometime that can happen.
Yeah.
I have to say, you know, I didn't tour with Rick a lot, and it wasn't like a family member. But I did see him in a few situations, and like I said, was always impressed and liked him. And was a fan of his, too, from the band's early records on and on and on. But all I can say is that was one of the songs in the last 8 years or so that was really pretty easy to write. The next thing I knew, it was really done.
Yeah.
So it was kind of just one of those things where I'm glad I was able to do it. Somebody needed to do it.
Yeah.
And maybe it just wanted to happen because it wasn't really hard to do.
Well, that's good. On the record, it sort of changed a bit and it becomes more fleshed out. Was that sort of on purpose? When you go to produce a record, obviously you have the chance to do things that you don't normally do live in your stage show. Do you purposely change things? Is this the way they're supposed to sound, is the way I hear them on the record? Or
not necessarily. You know, a record is one... You're with a group of people in a particular situation in a particular time, and after you've made a few records, you start to realize that they're going to kind of go the way they're going to go.
Yeah.
The Beatles probably had a lot of control because they were so incredibly talented, and they worked in the same studio for almost all of their recordings with the same producer. So they had an element of consistency there that most people don't have for their record.
Yeah.
Record after record after record. But, you know, you're really lucky if a record is actually a definitive version of a song. It's not necessarily so.
Yeah. Well, that's great. I certainly do enjoy the record, but for me, like I say, the live show is something different entirely, and so I think there are two sort of facets of your career, and so it's good that we have the chance to experience both, and I'm looking forward to seeing the live show anyway. If you don't mind, we'll play Wild as the Wind?
I think we should.
That would be terrific, and thanks very much for talking to us.
You are welcome.
Thank you.
Maybe you didn't know him, but he probably was your friend. He was oddly down to earth and just as wild as the wind, Rick was as wild as the wind. He played the biggest concerts and a little gig. He always sang his heart out at the crowd, the small or big, however small, ever big. Mister, got a minute? That's what he would say. Hey, Mister, got a minute? Well, I do, sir, today. Rick would take some He just swooped down and sniffed some anytime he saw, if he saw, if there'd be some that he saw. Rick was backstage loaded, I was sort of shocked. The man said, Rick, it's showtime. Rick walked out and knocked, and he rocked. Not one bad note, and he rocked. Hey, mister, got a minute? That's what he would say. There's a certain kind of wild child that never should get old, getting old. Picture Rick getting old. Hey, mister, got a minute? That's what he would say. Hey, mister, got a minute? Will I do, sir? But he probably was your friend. He was oddly down to earth and just as wild as the wind, as the wind. Rick was as wild as the wind.
That is Steve Forward. He's got a new record called Strange Names and New Sensations. Can't wait to get my hands on that Saturday night at the West End. But first, you know, tomorrow night, I wouldn't miss this for the world, the double-barreled CD release party. It's Scott Nolan and the legendary Gurf Morlex. It's going to be awesome. We're going to take a look back at a conversation I had with Scott Nolan in the studio a few years ago. That's right after a short break. Stay tuned for more Steel Belted Radio right after these.